Welcome, folks, to another episode of Slice of Orange. Slice of Orange is a podcast that dissects politics in North Orange County. This election season, our team will interview candidates on NOC's ballot, explain propositions and ballot measures, and discuss general election trends. Our goal is to increase civic knowledge in the public and introduce you to ways of getting involved. My name is Arush Naveed, and I am your host for the day. Today, I am interviewing Fullerton Councilman Fred Jung, who was elected in 2020 as the first Korean-American city council member in Fullerton's history. Before joining the council, Jung has served on Parks and Rec Commission and Traffic and Circulation Commission. Fullerton's police officers and firefighters endorse Fred Jung. A more extended biography of Jung's is available on his website, www.fred4fullerton.com. He is now running for re-election to the Fullerton City Council in District 1. Voters will be choosing between him and Matt Truxaw, a newcomer to Fullerton politics. So, Fred, thank you for being on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Let's dive right into the questions. So you have served on multiple committees and commissions alongside your 4 years as council member. What have you learned serving in local office all this time?
That the vast majority of the Fullerton public, or be it any public in the U.S., has far different priorities than local municipal government. Indeed, it is the last thing on their mind for the vast, vast majority. Fullerton's got about 150,000 residents, give or take 10 or 12,000, depending on the year. And that's not included all of the undocumented residents in our city, of which there's a substantial amount in the Latino community and a substantial amount in the Asian community, particularly amongst Koreans who are green card holders and choose not to apply for citizenship for various reasons. And Koreans are one of the highest undocumented amongst Asians. So there is a remarkable population size that counts on local government to just do the basic day-to-day things. They count on us, for lack of a better term, just to do our job. And they are not interested in the political aspects of the job. They're not interested in the opinions of the job. They just want the job done. They want to be able to go to a park and have it cleaned and safe. They want to be able to dial 911 and have a police officer come be able to have triage services if they're in an accident. They're injured by our fire department. These are the basic things that local government does, and by and large, most of the public in our communities, they don't really have much of an opinion on the things that we do on a council level, because again, they have priorities. Their priorities are going to work, trying to raise a family, trying to maintain some level of dignity amongst this world and do some good in their community. But what we do at City Hall seems to matter very little to a lot of the folks that live in our community, despite what we would like to believe as council members, right? We want to believe we're making this huge, larger than life difference, but we are. I don't mean to marginalize what we do. I'm saying from the perspective of the community, by and large, majority of them just don't realize what we do and don't necessarily really have much of an opinion one way or the other.
Right. We have noticed that too, in our reporting and the work we do is local politics tends to be kind of in the back of people's mind. And it's not something people really pay too much attention to unless something really, outrageously awful happens, and then all the attention comes to it. So you're right. Big part of it is really just doing the job well. And as long as nobody really knows what's happening, maybe that is something that's considered going okay for local politics. So, I appreciate that insight.
The only reason, and forgive me for interrupting, the only reason why I mentioned it that way is a lot of us try and govern by an echo chamber. And I know the federal government, folks in Congress are really guilty of this a lot. Why they listen to and govern by the loudest voices in the room. And I would encourage those that are listening to think about all of those that remain silent and whose opinions you don't know and you want to get to know. And you should make the effort to reach out to those that don't come to a council meeting, that don't read the local newspaper, that don't read social media blogs, or go on social media and on Nextdoor or some of these other things and know verbatim of what's happening. They are still citizens and residents of our city, and we have the fiduciary duty to make sure that we care for them just as equally as those that come regularly to a council meeting. You know, the same 12, 13 people that come to a council meeting, those that come when there's a topic that really interests them. Even if you had 200 people there, which would be outrageously large for any topic, that is such a small percentage of what actually our city is, that I encourage our listeners here to think about and consider that for a moment. Thank you.
Right. Thank you for that reminder. So you have been in office for a while now, and you have, I'm sure, learned many lessons. But what do you, I mean, this is your chance really to be bragging, right? Show off a little, don't be humble. What do you consider to be your top three accomplishments in the past 4 years?
Well, that's a great question. I think for our council, we've done a fairly remarkable job for all intents and purposes. Even from a very nonpartisan level, to correct a lot of the systemic concerns that our residents and the folks that are employed by our city had. Some of the retention and recruitment issues, I think we've curbed a lot of that with the substantial increases in salary that we've given. In the last couple of years, our council has done a very good job in really competing with the marketplace. What was happening prior to the pandemic was we were losing a lot of good, talented individuals that have worked in government for a significant amount of time. That is institutional knowledge you need to have. That is very important if you are going to continue at an elite level as a municipality. You need institutional knowledge. You need folks that have historical base and understanding of the city of Fullerton and local government, how it operates, and how to make it efficient. And we were losing a lot of that institutional knowledge because at a certain point, we were not meeting the wage requirements that the jobs provided. When you look at comparative cities and comparative counties and comparative agencies, and of course the private sector. So I think our capacity to give a competitive wage in the last few years has really done a terrific job in recruitment and retention. We had a fire department that was in mass exodus. We are almost now at full capacity at the fire department. We've had wonderful, not only lateral movement, but we've had great academies regarding our police officers. Same thing. While, you know, you're not just getting a lot of police officers out of academies anymore, because young people are not really looking to go through academy and being in law enforcement. That just doesn't seem to be in the purview of most young people right now. We are getting laterals because of the fact that we're competitive and we're a good city to work for. You come to Fullerton, you actually do work, you know, and you actually make a difference in the community. And I think the you know, it's public service. So people that work for a municipality really have to have the service part in mind much more than the public part. And they are serving, they are giving us a service and providing a service. And as a result, are paying them competitively has made a remarkable difference.
Right. So competitive pay for city employees. I think you've touched on a really great issue here, and I actually had a question for that later on, and we'll dive a bit more into that a bit later. But I really want to focus now on your reelection campaign. You know, what kind of encourages you to run again? What motivates you to be in office for another 4 years and continue serving the city as you have been in so many other ways too?
Well, God willing, it's 4 years, but there's a part of me that feels as though the work is not complete, that the progress needs to continue, and that I'd like to see the city in a much better place than I found it when I entered office. And, you know, the one thing that I tell folks and remind them all the time is, if I agree with you 90% of the time, and I disagree with you 10% of the time, it doesn't make me your enemy 90% of the time. And that gets lost amongst a lot of the echo chamber, the partisanship, the, you know, running to your team, your side, your party. A lot of what municipal government's supposed to do gets lost. And what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to compromise. We're supposed to collaborate. We're supposed to work together. And, I wish that happened more in local government, despite the individuals that may be on any particular council. They should have a common realization that things that are one party, and I'll give the example of our state, where one party is dominant. They have a supermajority in both houses. We have a Democrat governor, and I'm a registered Democrat. I've run as a Democrat, and I'm proud to be one. That said, some of the legislation that comes out of Sacramento, because of the fact that it's just one party rule, is terrible. And there's really no other way to put it. And they'll pass legislation, and just like we've done and we're doing now, they'll go back years later and correct it because they realize, uh-oh, that wasn't very good. And there were some severe unintended consequences as a result. And that's due to the nature of the legislative makeup right now, that if there were more voices on the other side, perhaps there would have been better compromise. Perhaps everybody doesn't get everything they want, but everybody gets something, and you craft better legislation as a result. I think when we are all fighting for all or nothing, and we have this almost a litmus test to what is a good this or a good that, you get into some problematic situations when it comes to passing, you know, pragmatic good legislation for our public.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. So it seems like your top priority is really passing good legislation for the public, regardless of, I guess, the politics that goes around and the arguments that go around. For you, public is top priority. Is that correct?
You know, for me, it is continuing the good progress that we've made. I think that there is an opportunity for us over the next few years to really put the city on a very good path forward. I'm not speaking about for the next few years. I'm talking for the next decade. So my top priority is continuing that good progress and continuing to govern in a compromising, collaborative way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now I'm going to get to a few specific questions about the city and what's been going on. So, you know, many Fullertonians, they lack faith and trust in their police as a result of killings that have happened, from Kelly Thomas's murder 13 years ago to Alejandro Campos Rios's murder just this year. Do you have faith in the current police chief's ability to change the culture and policy of this department? I mean, and what kind of goes on in your head? What kind of policies do you think of, future directions do you think of when you think about police brutality and these very tragic situations that have happened in Fullerton?
Well, I can tell you from my personal perspective as a Korean immigrant, the question itself is not something that I would even register. I don't have a lost faith in our police department, never have. And I experienced Kelly Thomas. I was here. I saw it in real time. You know, I think only two other council members experienced Kelly Thomas. Two did not. They weren't even here. They weren't even residents of our city. So they didn't see it and they didn't feel it. I actually was at some of the protests. I was at some of the council meetings. And I can assure you that the Korean immigrant community, the Korean American community, doesn't have a distrust or lack of faith in our law enforcement officials, particularly in the city of Fullerton. We have great faith that they are there to protect us, that they are there to serve and do both, protect and serve. So I push back on the question itself, because I think it really is not holistically right. I think there are mistakes that departments make because of all things. We learn as a society, the more knowledgeable we are, we learn as a society every single time the next generation comes up. They are more egalitarian. They are more inclined to seek rightful justice. So each generation thinks better, is better, and I have great faith in that. And so some of this kind of, you know, police negative activity that is perpetuated in the public via our media, I don't agree with. You know, I think officers do things in any line of work. They make mistakes, they make errors in judgment, and those that are should be held accountable. But that is not how I view our police department. I have never viewed the police department that way, particularly with the kind of changes it's made over the last 10 years, which is night and day compared to what it used to be, where you may be correct. It may have been an old boys club, but it's not now. And I have very great faith in our police chief, John Radis. He's a good man. And that's a good start to have a good man.
Right. So you're more on the optimistic side of things looking up and change happening in, as you say, rightful justice happening.
Absolutely. I have great faith in your generation. You're far better than me. So, of course, I have great faith.
Well, we certainly hope we can do things better. So moving on to another issue with City Council that you guys have seen before, you know, pensions, they are a huge obligation for city government budgets. And many cities have outsourced staff and services. And you did talk a little bit about this earlier. That's why I want to bring this question back. So what is your position on this trend? Where do you think there are cost savings? You know, should we be increasing city staff or cutting city staff? Or where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I've been fairly clear in terms of what I think our municipal government needs. We need to fill positions that are necessary to fill to be able to serve our public. That's that. The fact is, government just on its own in Fullerton has decreased in size substantially. I'm going to give you an example, not only to you, but to our listeners here, and they'll have a clear understanding. When about 14 years ago, which isn't that long, I'm long in the tooth, but 14 years seems to have gone by a blink with me. 14 years ago, our police department had about 170 officers allocated in the budget. We have about 120 now. That is an incredible decrease. 30% right off the bat in a matter of a little over a decade. Now, some of that is natural due to retirements and being unable to fill the positions again, because the young generation may not be inclined to go into law enforcement. It may not be a metric that they're interested in as a lifelong career. There are a lot of reasons behind that. But the fact is, government has decreased. You know, we have about a dozen park employees, depending on whether you look at full-time or part-time, it's even less than that. 14 years ago, we had 100. Mostly part-time, but we had 100 employees that worked in the Parks Department. So government, just on its own accord, through efficiencies, technology, through folks that are retiring, has decreased. So I think for us, a pension obligation is promises made, promises kept. It's one of the reasons why, some really good talent comes into the public sector. They sacrifice a competitive wage to the private sector today for the promise of a retirement tomorrow. And that has to be honored. So, some of the solutions are the state should not have overpromised what CalPERS returns were going to be. And, as the state often does, they overpromised, severely underdelivered, and now we as a local municipality are having to fill the gap. But we're not the only municipality doing that. That is the struggle every municipality, every city is going through right now. There are four cities in Orange County that have tax measures on the ballot: La Habra, Steel Beach, Orange, Buena Park, and I think a fifth in San Clemente is coming up. And why are they doing those things? By and large, it's because of the fact that there is this gap between revenue and expenses, and a large part of those expenses are pension obligations that are underfunded.
Right. Thank you for explaining that so clearly. So moving on to another issue, really something that's been coming up at City Council a lot, both in public comments and through a campaign called Walk on Wilshire. There is this pedestrianized area in downtown Fullerton, Walk on Wilshire, that was temporarily put into place. And now there are talks about having that be closed and making that into a street again for cars. So what are your thoughts on pedestrianized areas in downtown Fullerton, such as the Walk on Wilshire? And are you in favor of expanding this open space in the city to make it more walkable and bikeable?
Well, I am always in favor of providing more open space in our city. I'm just not in favor of closing a public street to do that. I've been extraordinarily consistent on this issue when it comes to Walk on Wilshire. I accepted it as a necessity during the pandemic, but the pandemic is over. That's not my determination. That's a determination of our government, our governor, our president. And as a result, that public street, I believe, should be open to street traffic, the car traffic. That doesn't mean I am a proponent of car traffic. I'm a proponent of the public street being open to what it was intended for, which is traffic, for vehicles to move through. I could cite public safety concerns, the lack of use, the fact that it only benefits primarily one business, and that only three are even using it right now. And there are far more businesses in downtown that don't get this allowance, that don't get this help from our city, that don't get the subsidy. I can make that argument, but instead I'll just stick to this. I have been consistent on this issue. I am perfectly a proponent of and a driver of the need for more walkability in our city, more bikeability in our city, and more green space in our city. But Wilshire Avenue in downtown Fullerton is not that.
So if we take Wilshire Avenue out of consideration for a moment, what do you think are some, you know, alternative solutions? Could there be other spaces that could be walkable and bikeable that could be converted into that, or to kind of become, you know, this community hub that Walk on Wilshire, the Save Walk on Wilshire group really is advocating for?
That's a great question. Yeah, absolutely. But you work with private entrepreneurship to get that. So I'll give you the example of the Fox Block that's being built out or will be, which is next to the Fox Theater. That street that once was an ingress egress will no longer be. It will be a walkability, this kind of plaza-like plan is in development there. But that's, you know, again, working with public-private partnerships to develop this public benefit and also a private benefit, because it's not as if the businesses there aren't going to benefit from it, right? But that is planned. It's done the right way from its inception. It's not ad hoc created like this, where we had orange barriers in place that were really an eyesore. Now you have all manner of signs all over the place, having to differentiate and delineate the space itself. It just wasn't done right, because when we closed it during the pandemic, the intent wasn't to leave it closed. It was a temporary fix to a very real problem. So I think the solution exists in these public-private partnerships that we're doing at the Fox Block.
Gotcha. Thank you for explaining that. So let's move a little bit into housing, and housing specifically for our city employees, teachers, and other workers. In your opinion, are homes in Fullerton affordable to these city employees? And if not, how do you think we can address this issue?
Once again, I push back on the formula of the question itself. Why is it affordability for only our employees, teachers, and other folks? Why isn't it for everybody? Why isn't it for you or someone who's a student? Shouldn't it be affordable for you? Affordability is an issue not just in the city of Fullerton. It's an issue in Orange County, in LA County, in San Diego County, Riverside County, Inland Empire. So affordability is an issue in all of California. And is the solution building more homes? I think that's part of the solution, but it's not the solution. Again, the state, and I'll opine on them again, they think the magic bullet is build more and the price of housing comes down. And I would tell you, the last 10 years have proven that very incorrect. We've built more homes in the last 10 years than we have in the last 20, and the cost of housing's tripled. And how do you explain that if it's just the market talking? So there are so many other issues at play. We have to make things more affordable by giving more incentives for folks to build. People that are in, you know, seniors that are living alone, we have to incentivize them to go into a community and sell their home to perhaps a buyer in their 30s that's looking to start a family. Empty nesters, scale down, move into affordable apartments. So again, that home can be sold to a family, someone that's starting a family in their 30s or 40s. There's so many other components than just building housing. It is a very important component, perhaps the most important. It's not the only thing to create affordability.
Right. So your focus is more on having affordable housing for all of Fullerton and having that come to play in a variety of ways rather than just building affordable
housing. Well, I think, you know, one of the solutions that I would like to focus on is building more senior housing.
Right.
You know, we have the largest generational workforce in the history of this country. That right now in baby boomers that are retiring en masse. And all of them should be afforded a wonderful home, great community, where mentally and socially they can remain fit by connecting with other seniors, by having sorority and fraternity amongst one another, rather than living by themselves in a empty nest home.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. So now I want to move on to something that is, this has come up as a concern really in the past few years, and that is kind of the mayor rotation process in city council. What are kind of your comments on that? And would you keep it the way it's been going now, or would you make changes to it if you are reelected?
Well, the mayor and the mayor pro tem rotation is not a participation trophy. Everybody doesn't get a term. You have to earn the confidence of the folks that you serve with. And if you haven't done that, you don't deserve it. That's it. It's plain and simple for me. It's cut and dry. And I think for me in particular, I like the process of what it is now. I would be unwilling to change it. I think it is important that if you are a council member, that you hold yourself to a standard amongst your colleagues, not just to the public, you know, when the cameras are on, or when you're out in public where it looks good and it sounds good. But, so much of the work that we do is oftentimes not broadcast. And, you know, you have to hold yourself accountable. So I wouldn't be in favor of changing it.
All right, understood. So one of the council members' direct powers is appointing residents to serve on city commissions. How would you ensure representation for our city's advisory commissions?
When I first got elected, I tried to appoint as many Asian Americans as I could on these committees. And I was very proud to have a extraordinarily diverse coalition of commissioners and committee members that I appointed. That said, we are always, as a city, looking for committee members and commissioner volunteers. And that's not for everybody. And I understand that. It's a lot of time for some. Their work schedules may not match the meeting schedule. So it's cost prohibitive to them to donate their time in that way. Because these meetings are public. They are noticed. So they are set at a certain time. You know, it's not like volunteering to clean up a park where you could do that on a Saturday or Sunday. And you could have, you know, varying hours in order to do that. As long as the sun's up or there's light, you can kind of clean up that park. These meetings are very rigorous in terms of their time frame. So I would like to see more volunteers. But the cost of goods and everything just to live in our society is so expensive now. You know, I suppose I shouldn't have that expectation. We're all fighting just to live.
That we are. So, you have served the public during the time of COVID, during time of quarantine. So you are well aware of the issue of this disconnect that is existing in our local community. So if you are reelected, how do you plan to meet with your constituents and be available for them, be available for the public in general, and get people involved, especially young people, because a lot of us don't really have an idea of how do we initially get involved? What are the opportunities that exist for us? So, you know, what kind of advice and solutions do you have for that?
Well, for anyone who's young, is to volunteer. If you can just scratch the itch of volunteerism, that's going to enhance your life to a degree you won't notice right away. But the point of volunteering, apart from doing good things and serving your community, is being able to see and experience something through someone else's lens, through someone else's shoes. And if you are afforded that opportunity, or you afford yourself that opportunity, I think it only enhances your life and who ultimately you can be if you will it. And so volunteering for anybody who's young, you know, if you can start doing it in junior high school and high school and learn the value of what it is to serve others, to have a vision that's bigger than yourself and believe in things larger than yourself, I think it only benefits us all in society, particularly for me. You know, I'm 50. I'm not getting any younger. And I'm going to need the younger generation to, you know, take care of me, I suppose, when I'm old and gray. And that requires, you know, a lived experience. That requires work experience. That requires volunteer experience to be the best at something or the best version of yourself that you can be. I would encourage everybody to be open to that. That said, no, our community has to, you know, see past some of the dogmas that exist in our society that have been around for generations. We have to realize that we're all brothers and sisters and that we share generally the same common objectives in life. You know, that we have each, you know, common goal, and that, you know, we are all countrymen and countrywomen, and that I rely on you just as much as you rely on me. And that the burden of responsibility is greater for your generation than it is for mine. It was greater for mine than it was for my parents. And it continues to grow that way. And, you know, and that's sometimes unfair, but that's the burden of responsibility sometimes. And I would say that, you know, if you can just find in moments of great agony and great depression, if you reach out, the compassion of your fellow man and woman is amazing. They'll realize your suffering and encourage you. And, you know, I miss the absence of sensible discourse sometimes. So I would encourage everybody to have some. Reach out to their council member, speak to them. You know, any citizen that requests a meeting with me, any resident that requests a meeting with me, any Fullertonian or visitor, anyone, I honor that. At the very least, I have a telephone conversation. But if you are making an opinion based on something and you don't know the first thing about that person, I would say that 90% of your opinion is incorrect.
Right. So where can people reach you, you know, if they want to talk to you on the phone, if they want to email you? Could you give us a little bit of your contact
information? Sure. My city email is fred.jung@cityoffullerton.com. My personal cell phone number, 714-488-8888. I give it regularly out, so don't be discouraged. Publish it. It's fine. And people are welcome to call, welcome to text, welcome to be, you know, leave me messages. And I'm happy to have discourse and, you know, learn about them and learn about their views and see if it will only enhance mine. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sure people, our listeners, if they have any questions for you, any concerns, anything they want to share, I'm sure they will go ahead and do that. So, you know, this is a question. The next question that I'm going to ask is something we always ask on this podcast. And really, it helps us get to know our the people we're interviewing well, because I think books are something that, you know, they're so personal, they're so dear to us, and such a great way to build community as well. So could you please give us, our listeners, a book recommendation, something that you love, perhaps a longtime favorite, perhaps something you're just reading right now?
It's called Conscious of Action, and it's by Kim Dae-jung. And Kim Dae-jung used to be the president of Korea, a friend of my father's. And he wrote a book on the value of democracy and what your role is as a human being on this earth. And it's a rather long read, but I encourage anybody who is wants to read on how one human being was able to make such a difference in his society, in this case. It is a really great journey, not only in the man, who is an incredible president for our country in Korea, but of the people of Korea and how they went from a war-torn, poverty-stricken country to a top 10 economy inside of a generation. And you'll get great insight into the thought process and the culture of Koreans as a result. So I do recommend that highly.
Well, thank you for that recommendation. Conscience in Action, the autobiography of Kim Dae-jung. That sounds very interesting. My last question is, if I've missed anything that you wanted to mention and I haven't really talked to you about, what would that be? And any, kind of last messages for our listeners?
No, I encourage everybody to, those that are involved anyway. And again, those that are actively involved are so few comparative, because we are all, just struggling to get through the day and to live life and to raise children and go to school or go to work, go to the second job. I encourage those that are willing participants in this democracy, that they get to know the individual that's making the decisions on their behalf. I think a clear understanding of who they are, or a better understanding of who they are, will give some better insight on why their decisions are their decisions, why they think the way they do. And this kind of back and forth communication affords them as well a possibility to learn about you and your priorities and your prerogatives. And that's very important, I think, in a really accelerated, excelling democracy. You have to have communication and dialogue.
Absolutely. So on that great note of communication and dialogue, we will be ending this interview today. So thank you so much, Mayor Pro Tem Jung, for being with us today. It was a very interesting conversation to have with you. And I hope that we can continue this into the election season and also beyond, because I think the big takeaway of today's interview is that communication and dialogue is important. So I think we will be definitely implementing that forward too.
Understood. I appreciate the time very much, though. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So that was the Slice of Orange NSC's interview with Councilman Fred Jung. For more episodes, please check out Slice of Orange NSC on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We are also on Facebook and Instagram, so be sure to follow us there.